Let's first talk about then this concept of human trafficking and how your office has kind of taken it on as one of the challenges that South Dakota faces.
Right. Well, approximately 4 years ago, soon after I had started as U.S. attorney, we had our first case of human trafficking come into the office, and involved a fellow by the name of Brandon Thompson. And Thompson had moved to the Sioux Falls area from Chicago. And when he moved to the Sioux Falls area, what he did is he started recruiting teenage girls for a commercial sex trafficking ring. And the way he did this is similar to the way that a pedophile would groom their victim. He was initially very kind to the girls. He would spend money on them. He would buy them dinner, give them a place to stay if they needed a place to stay, oftentimes giving them alcohol or drugs. Then he would say to the girls, well, look, let's make a little money together. And he would set them up on what he would call dates, where someone would pay $100, $150 to have sex with the young girl. Now, the girl, oftentimes what we saw is the girls would say, look, I don't want to do this anymore. I'm not comfortable with this. And that's when the violence would start. That's when the threats would start, the coercion, things like, well, look, I know you have a younger sister, or beating the victims. And that's how Thompson kept the girls from leaving his commercial sex trafficking ring. So we prosecuted Thompson here at the U.S. Attorney's Office, and it was the first commercial sex trafficking case that we had done in South Dakota. And Thompson received a life sentence for what he had done. Now, Thompson also had a long record coming into this, but the judge heard about how he had really brutalized these girls and forced them into this commercial sex trafficking ring. And so that's why he received such a high sentence. Now, we had hoped with Thompson that this would be an isolated incident, you know, a tragic case, but, and surprising to have something like that going on in South Dakota, but hopefully that would be it. And then we saw more and more cases coming, cases like Carl Campbell, other individuals who were doing similar things, were forcing young girls into commercial sex trafficking rings. That's when we developed our human trafficking task force here in Sioux Falls. And the reason why I wanted to create a human trafficking task force, really for a couple reasons. One, we create task forces when we feel like we have a significant problem, and it brings law enforcement attention to that significant problem. So we have task forces now for drugs, for terrorism, and for human trafficking. The other reason why it was important, I felt, to create a human trafficking task force was to make sure that law enforcement was sharing intelligence and sharing resources on these cases, because they were significant, important cases.
And so when you're dealing with this task force, who's a member of it, and what stage are we at as far as the task force goes right now?
Well, members of the task force include state law enforcement. So we have the State Division of Criminal Investigations. We have local law enforcement, so the Sioux Falls Police Department, the Sheriff's Office, the State's Attorney's Office, and my office, FBI. Homeland Security. So we bring several agencies together and make sure that we're all on the same page and that we're sharing intelligence and that we know not only what's going on with the cases that we're currently prosecuting, but also so that we know if there are other concerns in the community that need to be investigated.
Tell me about the fact that human trafficking has apparently is as great of a concern as things like terrorism and drugs. How do you combat the notion that, well, that stuff just doesn't happen here?
Well, I think if you look at our record of prosecutions, it becomes apparent that it does happen here. We've now had two individuals who've received life sentences coming from South Dakota for human trafficking. That's unheard of. If you look at other states our size, I think you'll be challenged to find any states that have our size that have people receiving life sentences. So I don't think that this is really an issue that's open for debate, whether or not we have this problem in South Dakota. Clearly, we do. And you only need to look at what's happened at the courthouse to see it. So in my mind, the debate over whether or not this happens, whether it's a significant problem, is over. And the only question is, what do we do to deal with it? Now, part of the reason why I've prioritized it is, one, when you look at the number of girls that we've had affected just in the Sioux Falls area, because that's where most of our victims have come from, you're talking about close to 100 victims that we've had in these cases. So we know that in terms of numbers, it's a significant problem, but we also know in terms of impact that it has on the community and specifically on the victims themselves, the impact is huge. It's very difficult for someone who has been trafficked, who has been sold, to go on and to live a normal, productive life. It takes it has a huge impact on the survivors, on the victims. So that's why we're prioritizing them.
What does trafficking look like then? Because when I think human trafficking, I think, you know, dark, dirty, like from place to place to place. But from what you're saying now, I feel like there's a possibility that it doesn't mean you're kidnapped.
No, it really doesn't. And certainly in other countries and in other parts of the United States, that might be what it looks like. But here in South Dakota, we have what I refer to as homegrown human trafficking, where people oftentimes move to the state from big cities, or they come here visiting from big cities, and they lure South Dakota girls into human trafficking. Now, the demographics of what we see in terms of these victims is, frankly, it's not typically the honor student, getting ready to go to college, who falls into the human trafficking ring. Most often the victims of human trafficking that we've seen, their ages range from 14 to 30. They often are battling substance abuse problems. They have alcohol or drug addictions. Oftentimes they're homeless. They're runaways. Some have been expelled from school. These are people oftentimes, not always, but oftentimes, who are really living on the fringes of our society, and they're very easy for people to forget about or not notice, because oftentimes they're not the people that they're running into in their daily lives.
So it's people who – the criminals are people who are exploiting some sort of vulnerability often.
Absolutely. They're exploiting really the most vulnerable citizens that we have, people who have nowhere else to go, people who have fallen through the cracks in our community.
There's a prosecution side of this and there's a prevention side of this. So how is the U.S. Attorney's Office dealing with those facets of human trafficking?
Well, prosecution-wise, we've been very aggressive. We work very closely with state, federal, local law enforcement. And it's really, I want to say, it's those law enforcement officers that have really done the great work in these cases, bringing them, developing the cases. Prioritize these cases above all others. These are huge cases for us. So on the prosecution side, we've gotten great sentences, very proud of the work that's been done. On the prevention side, a big part of this is letting people know, is educating the public, exactly what you're doing today. It's getting into the schools. I've spent a lot of time personally in schools talking about human trafficking. But it's really raising education, awareness, letting people know that this can happen even here in South Dakota.
Because your job is the justice side of it, to bring these people, to hold them accountable. But you seem more invested than that, and the task force is more invested than just making sure that people serve the right number of years in prison. This is about a greater moral justice. The problem, though, is that it's a topic that is taboo. A lot of people don't want to talk about it. A lot of people don't want to acknowledge it, even more than something like drugs or thieves or, you know, any of those things. So how do you get past that barrier that it's that human trafficking is sex trafficking as opposed to a different crime?
Right. Well, I think part of it is we just can't be ashamed to talk about it. We have to shed light on this issue. We have to let people know that this does happen here in our communities. And, you know, I'll tell you, for me personally, having had a chance to sit down with several of the victims here in my office, I've met with the victims. And the courage that I've seen from them and the commitment that I've seen from them, that they don't want to see this happen to their sisters. They don't want this to happen to somebody else in the community. And really, that's where I get, that's where I draw my strength, my passion for this issue is from the survivors that we've had.
What else do they say? What else do they tell you that is this constant thread that seems to run through all of the victims' stories?
You know, the constant thread is the process that so many of them go through. And what I mean by that is at the beginning, so many of these victims do not want to talk to law enforcement. They are hostile to law enforcement. And part of that, I think, is the idea that they're scared to death of the person who's been running this ring, and they feel like if they talk to us and then we don't do anything about it, but the pimp finds out, they're in for, you know, a very, very difficult time. And some of them have been trained to think, you know, law enforcement, all we want to do is put the victim in prison, which is the opposite of what we want to do. So early on in the process, there are a lot of walls up, and part of our job is to break through those walls, to show that we're committed to getting justice for them, to serving them, to getting justice. That's a process that we have to go through. And what we found at the end, when we get through this process, at the end, the person tends to be in a completely different state of mind and wants to do justice and wants to protect others who could be in their same situation.
So it switches from this defense of their situation to really seeing it as an opportunity to get out.
Right, right. It goes from a situation of fear to a situation of empowerment. And that's what we want to do, to help empower them so that they feel comfortable going into court and testifying about the abuse that they've been through.